and I appreciate it. It is interesting, when I began to prepare for this message today, I was thinking about how beautiful the fall or the spring holiday season has truly been for all of us. And as I was talking with Mr. Green earlier this afternoon, you are somewhat, it's difficult sometimes to say best ever. Really, when you think about it and you start to think, well, really, do I really understand the concept? Do I really feel what I feel like I'm trying to express here? And the reality is that it truly has, for me, been a spiritually uplifting spring holiday season, 2009. What I tell you, though, is I stand before you today, just a guy out here who has some real concerns. Now, I'm going to read some scripture today that I didn't want to read. I didn't really want to put it in the concept or in this view of the days of unleavened bread for 2009. But I stand here also very concerned about where we are going as a country. I stand before you concerned about who we are and what we are doing and why we're doing it. When you look out into this world and you see the great changes, particularly in the last 10 months or so, economically, politically, our president standing before people in the past week saying that this isn't a Christian nation, really. I know his point was to try to say, this is a melting pot. We're everything around here. We can be all things to all people, but the reality is we cannot and must not. So what do we do with what we are? Who are we? I challenge you today to ask that question. It is a time of introspection. It is a time of awareness. And if there is need for contrition, it is time to make it. It's time to look at ourselves and analyze who we are and to make the changes necessary. I turn your attention to Hosea. I want to read something from the interpreter's commentary about Hosea, and I'm going to read this quickly. But if you would turn to Hosea while I'm reading this, it says that Hosea had a prime concern, which was the failure of leadership. This is what his book's about as this commentator makes his view of the book. This man's name is Charles F. Kraft. Don't know him, but here's what he says about Hosea. He believes that his concern mostly is a failed leadership. He goes on to talk about priests and prophets were worse than useless. And the monarchy itself was an affront to the real kingship of God. But the basic problem was a cultural and religious sellout of the national life to Baalism. How true that is even in our society today when you look at what's going on, how we have sold out. We want to make people think that we're so understanding, we're politically correct. We want everyone to love us. The more you try to make someone love you, believe me, as this country, it's just like when you think about the placation of what our country is doing around the world and saying, I'm sorry, I this, I that. Well, you know what? It is proper to apologize when wrong. And I'm not saying that at times we weren't to make apologies, but the reality of it is we must be aware of who and what we are. And it seems as though we've forgotten that. We've lost that. We've lost the pride of our power. We don't address the issues of our own national interest, much less that of our relationship with others around the world. And this is, to me, what Hosea is saying here, too. We can relate to this. You see, Hosea was dressing down Israel. And we, I believe, are spiritual Israelites here. And we are a country in the sense that we are a nation of people. But even the United States, at least until it lost its pride of its power, and until we actually, in my opinion, lost, and this is only my opinion, lost our identity, we're an Israelite-like nation. We exist because we had that relationship with our Father in heaven. We existed because we were His people in the sense that we had. We were able to stand up and say, we are not like others. We believe in our Father in heaven. We support the country of Israel itself and its people. It seems as though that's diminishing as well. And yet we're told we are to pray for Israel. We're to support her people. What are we doing? I ask you, what are we doing? I ask you, what are you doing? Answer the questions in the sense of saying, if you would, please, you know, what are we and who are we? Hosea was profoundly concerned about the covenant history of God's people. I think you and I need to be concerned as well. He believed that the lack of basic faith, covenant, loyalty, and actual intimate knowledge of God was leading the nation to an imminent destruction at the hands of Assyria. Well, I see, in my opinion, what is an imminent destruction of this country. Not in the sense of, I'm not putting any time frame, I would say we're already in that phase of destruction, at least as a people, as someone who believes, who stands forth and says, I believe in the great God eternal. Remember what it says about, if you deny me before my Father, I will deny you. That's what Christ says. More and more, we can't even pray in the name of Jesus Christ. It's shocking. It's shocking. We can't even get into that, to where we can even say, Jesus Christ? I've watched, in my own view as a layperson, this diminishing of our relationship. I challenge the church to look at themselves as well, as best I can. I'm not trying to stand here and be something I'm not, but I'm just asking that we look. It's a good time to stand back. The spring holiday season, of course, again, as I talked about, is this time of introspection. Let's use it. Let's use it to look at who we are and how we might improve if we need to. He saw that the impending calamity of Yahweh's intentions to take his people back to start over again to the new, from a new Egyptian slavery. And it's almost like what's happening to us. You and I are getting back into slavery. The country itself is getting back into slavery. We're not standing clear of that which has been affecting us so much. We're not trying to withdraw from it at times. We're running into it. And that, of course, will cause us major problems. It's just like, really, when you think about the economics of our government right now, how are we going to resolve this debt we've created? Well, let me tell you how we're going to do it. We're going to go ahead and spend more money. Now, if you, as someone in your household, decides that, wait a minute, I've got too much credit card debt, my mortgage is too high, my car payment's too much, well, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. Let's see, I've been driving a Chevrolet, I'm going to go out and buy a Cadillac. Let's see, I have a 3-bedroom house, let's just go buy that mansion on the hill. That works. Obviously, anyone would say, no, this can't happen. I have to withdraw from doing all of these things. I have to quit the spending. I have to do all of these things that caused me to be in debt. But you see, it seems as though we are doing the 180 when we should be setting aside those things that have got us into that position. We seem to be running into it even in a more robust way. Balaam is shortly to be smashed and his people are to be disciplined by exile. Yet basically the act of wrath and judgment would result in Yahweh's suffering and redemptive love for his people. They are his bride. And of the Exodus period, his once elect but now wayward son, his father loves the call to repentance, rebirth, resurrection, to new life. I'll stop there, and I would, as I asked you to, please turn to Hosea. I assume you're there. And we're just going to do a brief overview of Hosea. We're not going to actually spend much time here. We're actually going to discuss this Christian walk, this life, this journey, and to try to put it into a perspective of where are we going. I look at the spring holiday season, again, as a time for us maybe to step back, to look at our journey, and to look at this past year as a segment of that journey. History, you fail in life, it says oftentimes, if you don't look at the history of your life, if you don't look at history, because history tells you where your future is in actuality. If you fail to recognize history, you will fail in your future it seems to be reasonable to me to think that way, at least when putting it within that scope or that parameter, to understand that there's lots to look back on, and we want to do that. But if we look at Hosea, just going through some of my subheadings, it just says the restoration of Israel. There is this address here in the first chapter, and it talks about in two, God's unfaithful people. And if I could give you an assignment, if you would allow me to, it's to read Hosea. Read it fully and see what Hosea is trying to express to the physical country of Israel. God's mercy on his people is addressed also in chapter 2. Israel will return to God. God's charge against Israel in verse 4, or chapter 4. The idolatry of Israel, impending judgment on Israel, a call to repentance. Impotence of Israel and Judah. All of these things seem to be discussing the human condition that hasn't really changed a great deal in the last several thousand years, as we heard in the sermonette, how we heard about this historic view, this archaeological view, which could point us in a direction of validating Scripture, validating what's in the book. Well, it's so true here, too, as we look at our current condition and that which is out into the future. The apostasy of Israel is in verse 8, or chapter 8, and judgment of Israel's sin in 9. It continues on. Because of the sake of time, I'm going to stop on going through the chapters of Hosea and ask you just again to read the book when you have a chance. But I do want to turn your attention to something said, if I can find it now, in and I can't really. I wish I'd written it down. I was skimming through it. But it talks about Israel and how Hosea's trying to relate to them. And he's trying to say, Ephraim, don't you get it? Don't you understand what's going on here? You're setting yourself for Assyria to destroy you. That's exactly what it's saying. And I would say to us here, that's pretty much a similar circumstance as we look at what's going to cut us asunder in many ways. What's difficult, and this is where it requires faith, and it requires knowledge, and it requires an understanding that maybe we don't completely have, or I certainly don't have, and that is so much of this in one way or another, when you talk about it in a national view, we don't have a great deal of control over. You've all been put into a major debt. You're going to have to pay if you want to be a nation here. You're going to have to do these things. There are many changes on the front governmentally. Little things. Well, not so little in one. There is a House resolution called H.R. 645, I believe, and it is sponsored by Mr. Ted Kennedy and Mr. Dick Durbin. And they're talking about things such as organic gardening. Now, you don't think maybe too much about that, but what it suggests is that should be made illegal. It says that no longer can you raise beef for yourself or buy beef that hasn't been inspected. You see, because one of the sponsors, the underlying writer of this, and this is just what I read, and it states it as this fact, and you can go on the internet and see it, is a lady whose husband just so happens to work for Monsanto. Well, what do they sell? They sell chemicals. They sell pesticides. They sell things that will make you a lot of profit, but not necessarily healthy for you. Now, I couldn't help but think, and this takes me quite a ways, but think about it. You're not going to be able to buy organic vegetables, for an example, or meat. Where does that take us in one way? I don't know why. I can't help but think of what it says in Revelation 13, where it says they're going to require the mark. They're going to require you to either do it their way or you don't do it. Now, you can say, man, that's a stretch, Jim. Well, maybe it is. But I suggest to you that things are really changing. And that we need to understand how important it is that we become aware that we can no longer sit. You know, I look at this group, and I am so grateful for all of you. I know a couple of years ago it looked pretty shallow. You might say, well, it looks shallow now. No, 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 no. There's a whole crowd here. And it looked as though with my inability to, the lack of faith, and I know I've mentioned this before, but I've got to allow me to do so again. The lack of faith was that I did not think that we would even exist as a group at this time. And the fact of the matter was, it was our Father, in essence, was saying, don't worry about it. Sit back, and I will provide. I didn't have that necessarily, that view or that faith or that strength. But I suggest to you, you're going to need it. I'm going to need it because this world's a changing and it's coming. And we need to prepare for it, and we need to be aware of it. It goes on, and I'd ask you to turn to chapter 4, because I do want to read this. Because I think, at least in my case, I've missed what it said. I know I've read it before, but I miss the completeness, the power of this verse, these two verses. Well, actually, one verse, I'm sorry. Hosea 4, verse 6. You probably know where I'm going, but it says, My people. I don't guess it says it three times, but I want to say it to you because I want you to understand it's not talking about somebody across the street. It's not talking about your neighbor, really. It's not talking about someone that's going to attend sunrise services tomorrow. It's talking to you. It's saying, and to me, my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge because you have rejected knowledge. I also will reject you from being a priest for me. In other words, you won't even represent me. Now, you can say, I'm not doing that. Well, I'm not saying necessarily that you are, but I would ask you to be aware of the fact that there is that possibility that it could happen. I would ask you to become more aware of what our surroundings are. I would ask you to understand that this is important because he says, my people are destroyed. It's not, you're not going to even, it's not as though you just sit here, you get away with it. There's a passage that says you're destroyed. You're destroyed for this lack of knowledge. You've rejected it. And I also will reject you from being the priest. He goes on to say, because you have forgotten the law of your God. I also will forget your children. Now that is a huge statement for me. And every parent in this room needs to understand that it isn't just about you. I've been told that often. It's not about you, Jim. See, I tend to think it is. The whole world revolves around me, doesn't it? But it says it's not about you. It says it's about not only what you understand, but what you share with your children. I want to pose a question to you as well. As we're going to turn to Exodus now, would you turn with me to Exodus 12? And while doing so, I'm going to pose a question for you, because you see, if you're going to be this analytical about your journey, and if you're going to look at it and you're going to try to embrace it, which I know all of us are, I want you to understand that the God eternal is with you. You know that, but it's good to be reminded. I pose a question to you. In your moments of meditation, in the peace of your home, in those silent times, have you ever prayed? Have you ever thought about? Have you ever thanked God for a sidewalk? A sidewalk. I know it's seemingly an unusual question. If you're like me, you've never thanked God for a sidewalk. You've never even given it much thought. But there is someone in our room today who has prayed that prayer. Little guy, I love him so much. It's shameless for me to bring up my grandson, but it's a way to do so. When he was staying at our house not too long ago, will you guys not be so, they're all crying over here. I don't, it's not so bad. But, and this is hard for Jim. He can't watch anyone. So I'm going to look over here. So my wife runs out to me. One night, they were staying at the house, and Grandma and Peter and Edward were praying. And she told me, I wish I had this on video. Oh, it was so cute. It was so wonderful. Edward was wanting to pray with Grandma, and he prayed with her, and he talked several times in his prayer about thanking God for a sidewalk. Well, I had to think to myself, I just, and this is license on my part, as to why was he praying to God for a sidewalk, thanking God for a sidewalk. I think, when I think about it, well, where does he live? He lives out in the country, lots of cactus, lots of uneven ground. He's a little guy. He's got a big dog that loves to knock him over. His name is Jacob, and Jacob and Edward are going down across the prairie, and they get knocked over. There aren't a lot of sidewalks. Well, we live in town, and he was staying with us, and we were headed towards the park one day just after that, and I noted the fact that he really wanted to walk on the sidewalk. Well, why did he want to walk on the sidewalk? I got to thinking, well, maybe it's because he likes the levelness, the evenness of this walk. Maybe he likes the idea that it allows him to go down this path easier than he would normally have. I would suggest to you today that you look for that path, that you look for the sidewalk, that you look for the levelness of God's law, and you set aside all that unevenness of this world. That is what I would like to leave you with today as well. I'm not done. I shouldn't say leave you with, right? This is what I'd like to start with, is the idea that you remember as we read this, and as we consider that God destroys, Hosea is writing that God would destroy even the people because of their lack of knowledge. You see, there is free moral agency. There are things that we are beyond our control. The environment that we're in. If you were to do a blood sample of a newborn baby, you find that they have over 200 chemicals in their body, is my understanding. That's not anything that they wanted. That's not the control that they would like to have on their lives. You don't necessarily have that either. But what we have, we must make work. And what we have, we need to exercise as to the glory of the great God eternal. That's what this is all about. This is why the plan of God is such that he gives us his high holy days where we can stand back and to understand and to look at what he really intends for us. I turn your attention to Exodus 12, and I want to just begin here in verse 24, because it says, "And you shall observe these things as an ordinance for you and your sons forever. It will come to pass when you come to the land which the Lord will give you, just as he promised, that you will keep the service." In other words, you continue to keep Passover. You continue to keep these days. If you were, and we won't turn there, if you would allow me, just in Luke 22, the very first verse talks about the days of unleavened bread being that of the Passover. You see, they can be interchanged as their usage, I believe. And here we are on this Sabbath day. You could call it the Passover season. You can call it, of course, part of the days of unleavened bread. But these are something that you need to cling to. These are something that make your life different. We hear about all the beautiful traditions. And as I was talking with someone the other day, I was talking about how big I was on tradition. I love tradition. I'm an old guy. Traditions are getting more and more vivid in my mind. And we talked about just some of the special things that go on during these days of unleavened bread. If you were in Israel in the time of Jesus Christ in Jerusalem, as a small boy, Jesus was walking through the city of Jerusalem. He could be able to smell these aromas, these special aromas wafting through the air. You see, it was a time, a beautiful time, because they depicted it in that manner. Because Christ had not sacrificed. He wasn't sacrificed yet. We have a different view. We have the New Testament view. But at that time, they were dealing with so many beautiful things when they could smell the aromas. They were wearing new clothes. There were even marriage proposals because so many people were coming up to Jerusalem that didn't even see each other. It was a beautiful time. It was a beautiful time this past Tuesday when we had Passover. Yes, there was solemnity, but you walked away knowing that the great God eternal had saved you. You had been passed over for certain death. And then there was the night to be much remembered. And it was a beautiful time. I was noting the fact that we could even have the doors open and we could feel the air. You could look at the moon. You could understand this relationship. And there was this haste in this sense that I turn your attention to Revelation 22. The very last verse where it says that Jesus Christ is coming quickly. And our response is, please come quickly. You see, these point us in this direction. We know we need Jesus Christ. We know we need his return. We know things are going to be even more difficult. But we must prepare and adjust to all of these things. He goes on to say, and I'll turn just quickly to verse 29, "And it came to pass at midnight that the Lord struck all the firstborn of the land of Egypt." We know this is being the 10th plague. And I noted that when Mr. Scriber was talking about things that were important about Passover, Eva brought up the idea that it was a reminder of how Israel was being brought out of Egypt. For us, the significance being brought out of sin. What a beautiful sentiment to think about how, again, the Passover being spared. So the firstborn of Pharaoh and all that were Egyptian or had no the blood on the lintel were killed. Basically, if you would allow me to paraphrase, so Pharaoh rose in the night. He, all of his servants, all the Egyptians, and there was a great cry in Egypt. You know, nowadays, this is like the red line, the red phone, and you're getting the call saying, here it comes, here's the nuclear attack. And here's Pharaoh. Can you imagine he's been told of his loss? He's been told of those around him who have lost loved ones. He's been told that this is not good. And there was this great cry. There was great pain. Of course there was. People are human. You know, we have all of these enemies. Say, as a national view, we have enemies that are over in another country, whatever, or we fight a radical Islam, or whatever. But when someone loses a child, normally there are those that would argue that it is martyrdom, but most people feel that pain. And this is what was going on. No house. There was not a house where there was not one dead. These people were in pain. This was something that had happened to them. And look at what was really going on here. As we continue, it says, and then he being Pharaoh, called Moses. Well, you see, now here's average Egyptian. He's out in his community. She's out in her community. Has nothing to do with this, really, other than they are part of that nation. Just like you are part of this nation. And yet, they suffered because Pharaoh was hard-hearted. It says, then he called for Moses and Aaron by night and said, rise and go up from among my people, both you and the children of Israel, and go serve the Lord as you have said. Get out of here. We've had it with you. We can't take it anymore. We've had our fill. Take your flocks, take your herds, take whatever you want. The Egyptians urged the people in verse 33 that they might send them out of the land in haste. I can understand that. These were like lepers to these people. It's time to get out. We can't handle this. We've suffered too much. These whole plagues, this is something I had no control over. It's quite painful. It poses a question, we shall all be dead, or states emphatically, we shall all be dead. If we don't get rid of these people, we've got a problem. And so the people took their dough before it was they didn't have time, they weren't able to having their kneading bowls bound up in their clothes. In other words, they were leaving in haste. Now the children of Israel, in verse 35, did according to what Moses had told them, and they had asked the Egyptians articles of silver, articles of gold, and clothing. And I've often wondered, what was that all about? What did that mean? Well, consider this. The Israelites, and maybe you all have, and I'm just like, I didn't know. But you think about it in that actually they were getting their provisions. See, God was providing for them. They didn't have any of this. They were slaves. They didn't have any means of getting by, and yet he provided it. Maybe that was a sidewalk. I don't know. Maybe it's what you have. You ever? I remember Mr. Velasquez in one of his messages. This was a while ago. Talked about the poem Footsteps. You remember that? And how ultimately you end up seeing this singular set of footsteps. You think? I'm sorry. Footprints. I'm sorry. Footprints instead of steps. But you see these prints going down the sand, and you think to yourself, well, that's me. That's me. And then you really hear, well, no, it was God carrying you or Jesus carrying you. And in reality, I think that there's validity to that. Sometimes we think we're doing these things and it's not the reality of our life. I think you and I can put that into perspective, but I think we're going to need it even more and more because we have to have faith. We're going to have to rely on God. We're going to have to understand that we can't do this anymore. We cannot get it done. Why? Because a lot of it's out of our total control. Even if we thought we could, we can't. Let me tell you about the national debt just real quick again, because I like figures and my wife's always laughing at me. I'll tell you all kinds of figures. Also, I'll tell you, you can't sneeze and keep your eyes open. She's heard that a million times. She wants me to stop that one, okay? Well, maybe not a million, but I love figures. But anyways, the fact of the matter is this debt is so huge that this being put into motion cannot be stopped. I don't care whether you have a change totally in the political party or you have a change in how things are done, at least humanly, it can't be stopped. Now, what's interesting about that, in the past, we've always said, well, that's what's so wonderful about this system, that if you don't like what's going on, you can vote them out. You can make the changes necessary. But what I'm hearing is, I don't care. This situation can't be changed. If it finally gets into motion, we cannot make a difference. No matter what we might do, no matter if we wanted to vote someone else in, or what, however it goes, this has altered our country as we know it. And my understanding is, it ain't changing. Now, what does that mean to you and to me? Don't know quite yet. I would suggest to you that you're going to see things change so drastically, maybe not within the next year, but you're going to see things change to a point where so many of us like to think that we're not really involved with that circumstance. I would suggest to you, when you start having to pay $3, $4, $5, $6 for a loaf of bread, and $12 for a gallon of gas, and maybe $10 for milk, and suddenly you're in a wheelbarrow-type situation. We've talked about that before. It has happened before. Remember how Mr. Scriber was talking about, this was on our father's business, and they were interviewing some gentlemen that are in Africa. And they were talking about, and I forget the country, but they were talking about how they had such hyperinflation that, say you were paid today, you better spend it. It's almost like you should have spent it yesterday, but you just didn't get it. Because the fact of the matter is you couldn't save it because it was worth even less tomorrow. Do you understand what that can be like for us as a family, as a nation, as a people? Now, it's going to maybe cause us to understand maybe what was expressed a little more in Acts 2, in that last part of that chapter, where it talks about the communal church, where it talks about us having to help each other, where it's talking about, see, right now we're all pretty independent. We really are. But I think we're going to be more dependent. We're going to be codependent. So with that in mind, we need to understand what God has for us. That's my opinion, and I'm only sharing these as my opinion. It's not thus says the Lord. It's not something that I've necessarily read. I am just influenced by what I have been exposed to suggest these things to you and to take this moment, because this is our Exodus. So let's prepare. So we called on Moses, and they did all the things. They got the flocks. And what is interesting to me, in verse 40, I get to mention some numbers. It says they sojourned. The length of stay that they had in actuality was 430 years. See, it didn't happen overnight. They weren't just there a couple of days. They were dealing with this generation after generation after generation. And it came to pass at the end of the 430 years, on that very same day, that all the armies of the Lord went out from the land of Egypt. It was a night of solemn observance. Of course, to us, the night to be much remembered. To move on quickly, we'll turn our attention to chapter 13, verse 17, where it talks about the wilderness way. And when Pharaoh had let the people go, that God did not lead them by the way of the land of the Philistines, although that was near. For God said, lest perhaps the people change their minds. See, when things got tougher, when things aren't easy, well, maybe it's not so bad there in Egypt. Maybe the food wasn't so great. Didn't have the best house, but hey, at least I was alive. I was secure. My kids were okay. Things weren't so bad. I wonder if that was what was going on. Maybe not, but I've wondered. So God led his people around the way, the wilderness of the Red Sea, and the children of Israel went up in an orderly fashion out of the land of Egypt. And Moses even took the bones of Joseph. for he had made a vow. He said, God will surely visit you and shall carry up my bones from here with you. And that's what Joseph was saying. So they took their journey in verse 20 to the wilderness. Verse 21, and the Lord went before them day by day in a pillar of cloud to lead the way, and by night in a pillar of fire to give them light so as to go by day or night. He did not take away the pillar of cloud by the day or the pillar of night by fire by night from before the people. In other words, that was in front of them. They could understand it. It was a way of maneuvering. I would suggest to you the pillar of light you have, the cloud at night, are your scriptures, this book, your ability to meditate, to pray, to fast, to share with each other, to assemble. Look at, we're assembling in such relative freedom. We're assembling now in peace. We're assembling in a beautiful room in actuality. I mean, it is safe haven. People don't necessarily have that. Even today, they cannot meet in peace and joy and harmony as we have. To hear the beautiful music, to look at the beautiful flowers. Incidentally, thank you for those. They express the nature of our great God's creation, don't they? They're beautiful. The simplicity of life in many ways. So much of what we live in is so complicated, so difficult. And yet, it seems like the simple things of life are the best. In chapter 14, and Mr. Velasquez touched on this on the first day, and I hope he doesn't mind me also trying to talk about it as well. Maybe not as eloquently, but I really need to talk about it in this. It talks about the Red Sea, this crossing of the Red Sea. Have you ever thought about it as a battle? Have you given that thought that this was actually a battle? This was a battle of wits, at least, between the Pharaoh and God. He might not have thought it was between him and God. He thought it was probably Moses. He thought, well, Moses doesn't know what I know. Moses doesn't know what my generals know. They can't possibly know as much as I have. He's been a slave. He's been around all these people. He's been around all these slaves. They can't do anything. They don't understand. They have no idea of military. All they're good for is making brick. That's all they know to do. Wait a minute. Why am I so worried? So now he gets to thinking about this. And he says, well, it's time to go after these guys. They've made fools of us. They've humbled us. And I'm mad about it. So he says, for Pharaoh will say of the children of Egypt in verse 3, they are bewildered by the land. The wilderness has closed them in. You see, because he sees where they're staying. He sees where they're located. He sees where they've drawn camp. And he says, what a bunch of doofuses. He sees that pillar of fire, you see. What he doesn't really understand, of course, it's been moved back as this continues to go on. Now it was the king of Egypt, in verse 5, that the people had fled, and the heart of Pharaoh and his servants were turned against the people. They had been hardened again. Why have we done this? We have let Israel go from serving us. We've lost our free labor. We've lost all these people that we can whip up on. What's going on here? Are we crazy or what? We've given them everything we got here. We've given them our gold and silver, and we've let them out. We've given them livestock. What are we doing? So he says, get ready. Harness your chariots. Let's do it. We're going to do it. Here's the battle beginning. He's saying, we're not going to take this lying down. Have you ever done that? Maybe improperly. I know I have. I mean, I've lost perspective. Pharaoh lost perspective. My people die for lack of knowledge. And I will visit that lack of knowledge upon the generations, is what it's really saying here. Look, if we don't teach our children, for an example, what can we expect? Look at our society out here. I know Mr. and Mrs. Reynolds can tell you stories about what they deal with. I know my wife can tell you stories about what they deal with. All because people have failed to do what was right. And they were having babies like crazy anyways. They didn't care. It seems as though they, I mean, maybe I shouldn't be so adamant about that. But the fact of the matter is, these people did not assume their responsibility. They did things, and I don't mean that, and it sounds like I'm being very condemning, and maybe I am, but I mean, the fact of the matter is this is the awareness that we need to have, that we cannot go about our lives without understanding our responsibility or the knowledge that we must have in order to function properly. 600 choice chariots in verse 7, and all the chariots of Egypt with captains over every one of them. In other words, these were the big boys. These were the guys that knew how to get it done. And the Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and he pursued the children of Israel, and the children of Israel went out with boldness. So the Egyptians pursued them, all the horses and chariots, his horsemen. And it goes on in verse 10 to say, and when Pharaoh drew near, the children of Israel lifted their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians marched after them. So they were very afraid, and their children of Israel, and the children of Israel cried out to the Lord. You ever done that? Have you been approached by a Pharaoh in your life? Have you been approached by something that comes against you? When we talk about Passover season and the days of unleavened bread, oftentimes one of the things you will hear is, oh, this happened to me. I can't believe this happened just before Passover. I can't believe this is going on. And we know that when you deal with this cleansing, when you deal with this introspection, Satan doesn't want you to be looking at yourself and understanding what's going on. There are so many afflictions that tend to take your mind off of this. I know I was thinking that Monday when things were going on in our life. And I'm thinking, why now? Why now? This was going on for 2 months. Why today? Well, maybe it had nothing to do with me, but I was sure thinking it did. I sure was. So, and even more so for Karen. So there I was. And I remember praying myself, crying out to my Lord and saying, please help me with this. I'm frightened about this. This shouldn't happen now. Alleviate this from me. Take it away. And it was. In actuality, it was. Undeservedly so, maybe, but there were many people involved. Not just me. Not just about Jim here. And then they said to Moses, because there were no graves, why did we come out of Egypt? What was the deal here? Why? Why, once again, it's posed, why is this happening to me? Come on. I didn't have to come out here to die. I could have died there in Egypt. And in verse 12, is this not the word that we told you in Egypt, saying, let us alone that we may serve the Egyptians, for it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die out here in the wilderness? And Moses said to the people, do not be afraid, stand still and see the deliverance, the salvation of the Lord, which he will accomplish for you today. Show some faith. Look out here and understand that you're not alone. I'm going to take care of it. It's just like Garth Brooks in his song, Thank God for Unanswered Prayer. Now, you may not really like the song, but I always remember how often we sometimes pray for, or I pray for things, and the fact of the matter is I didn't have the perspective. I didn't really understand what was going on, and ultimately I thought maybe it wasn't answered, but then a lot of times it's been answered, I just didn't see the way it was answered, or it didn't need to be answered. And the fact of the matter is that it was left alone, and I was better for it. So I think about it in that way, where it says, stand back, understand who you are and who I am. And sometimes what we think about is not what God has intended at all. The Lord will fight for you, and you shall hold your peace. In other words, you sit there. Let me take care of it. And the Lord said to Moses, why do you cry to me? Tell the children of Israel to go forward. This is what God is saying. Can you not hear the frustration? He's providing another means of protection. He's providing that sidewalk, you might say. And yet they're not really focusing in on that at all. They're too busy within themselves. So again goes on in verse 17, talking about how they hardened the hearts of the Egyptians. And the Egyptians shall know that I am the Lord when I have gained honor for myself, in verse 18, over Pharaoh, his chariots, and his horsemen. And the angel of God, now here's the thing we were talking about earlier. The angel of God who went before the camp of Israel moved and went behind them. And the pillar of cloud went from before them and stood behind them. Well, what's interesting about that, if you look at the military tactics of the day, and if you look at this in the form of a battle, usually when you are looking, there are several things about this, but when you look at the flame, when you see that pillar of fire, it's in front. It's in front of these people. So now, Pharaoh, he sees this light and he's thinking, well, hey, we got him now. We got him cornered. What's there? The only thing there is the Red Sea. And he's staring at this flame, and they say that, of course, at night, the thing you should never do is look at this bright light. And they had all of these 600 chariot men, possibly at least, looking at this flame. They were becoming blinded by this light. They weren't realizing what was going on. You see, God was taking care of it. Another sidewalk. He goes on and says in verse 21, then Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and the Lord caused the sea to go back by a strong east wind. Wait a minute. What's that about? Maybe, just maybe, there's speculation, another sidewalk. A strong east wind. Now, if you live on my side of the hill, when you hear that wind, it roars. Oftentimes, you can't hear anything else. You see, not only were these chariot men blind, they were deaf. They couldn't actually hear what was going on. Now, here's all these Egyptians. Israelites. I'm going to put myself in that crowd real quick, okay? We're going to get it, and we're going to get it bad. It's going to be bad. We're going to die. And I'm not liking this at all. I should have just stayed in Egypt. This is not cool. You see, this isn't the way I wanted to go. And yet, God has blinded these Egyptians, and he has deafened them. And these people were freer to move than they ever realized. Have you ever thought about that? That in essence, your enemies have been blinded and deafened, and you've been freer to move than you realize through the law of God. We've talked about it before. We've talked about how the commandments, God's holy days, they're nothing but freedom. So many people find, you'll talk to people and they say, how restrictive. Oh, the commandments, the don'ts. No, they are the protection of your life. Try someone stealing your stuff. Or coveting your wife, or all of these things that go on, lying and cheating, and all these things that perverse your life and your relationship with others, much less that of the God eternal. These are the things that protect us. These are the things that blind others, it seems like. It's like Mr. Scriber was talking about during Passover when he talked about reading these scriptures, and he says, it just seems so obvious to us, doesn't it? It seems so obvious, and it's because of the Holy Spirit. And no, we can't explain why us and someone else. That's not the point of this. But it seems like some of these things seem so clear. They seem so reasonable. And yet, you look out here, we should have in other words, this room shouldn't be big enough at all. Instead, they're in the mall buying the Easter dress or maybe a new suit or whatever they're going to do for net tomorrow. They're preparing for eggs, Easter bunnies. What kind of? Think about it. Does that make sense? Not to us. I don't know. I'm left somewhat speechless on that. But so they continue on. This east wind is going, and so now this Red Sea is made dry. Another sidewalk. So the children of Israel went into the midst of on dry ground, and waters were a wall to them. This is verse 22. On the night, on the right hand and on the left. And the Egyptians pursued and went after them into the midst of the sea, all Pharaoh's horses, his chariots, and his horsemen. Now it came to pass in the morning that the Lord looked down upon the armies of Egypt, the Egyptians, through the pillar of fire. He could see them through that light. He took off their chariot wheels. Not going to go too fast now. Not going to be able to function. How many times have you heard the saying about a life in general? Well, I don't know, the wheels just fell off. I wonder now if that came from that. The wheels just fell off. I can't explain it. Don't know why, but it just happened. So that they drove them with difficulty. You're not going to move a chariot very well without the wheels. And the Egyptians said, let us flee from the face of Israel. You see, they had gotten their fill. They had realized that this was not worth pursuing. For the Lord fights for them. You would think that they, of course, do you see, these 600 chariots were doing what they were told. Pharaoh's heart was hardened. But it didn't matter because our Father in heaven was in command of the situation. Moses stretched out his hands over the sea in verse 27, and when the morning appeared, the sea returned to its full depth while the Egyptians were fleeing into it. Not only were they, in other words, they were going into it because they were still doing what they thought was necessary, and rather than being able to extract themselves from it, they find themselves head over heels with water. So the water returned and covered the chariots and the horsemen. But the children, they walked on dry land, and the waters were a wall to them. So in verse 30 it says, so the Lord saved Israel that day out of the hand of the Egyptians, and Israel saw the Egyptians dead on the seashore, and thus Israel saw the great work which the Lord has done in Egypt. So the battle raged, and who won? The Israelites won because the God Eternal made it so, as he makes it so in our battles in life. Interestingly, there's the Song of Moses, and it talks about how the triumph was glorious, as it will be for you and for me. It continues on in verse 20, and you see a song from Miriam, and it talks pretty much the same way, and says, he triumphs gloriously. I turn your attention, though, quickly to verse 26 in chapter 15, where it says, if you diligently heed the voice of the Lord your God and do what is right in his sight, give ear to his commandments and keep all of his statutes, I will put none of the diseases on you which I have brought on the Egyptians, for I am the Lord who heals you. I am Jehovah Rapha. I am the one that takes care of these things. And you see, all of these afflictions weren't just physical. These people were facing many things, physically, spiritually. In essence, they were being addressed in their emotional view. And he says, if you do the right things, these things will not happen to you. There is that scripture is just as pertinent today as it was thousands of years ago. And when you recall Isaiah 53, where it talks about how he bore our stripes physically, spiritually, emotionally, he looks and he says, in the New King James, it says it pleased him. In other words, he addresses the issue. He knew that in order to be freed of this sin, the only sacrifice that could be made was that of his son, Jesus Christ, who knew no sin. It was the only reason he bore that beating with a cat of nine tails. His flesh was just ripped from him. He died one of the most agonizing deaths man could conjure up, believe me. The Romans were good at it. They knew how to do it. They were able to make this happen in such a way that it was the ultimate sacrifice. But it was because the God Eternal said it had to be, and it had to be that way. And remember what Jesus said? He said, look, if this cup can be taken from me, please. But he was willing to make that sacrifice. I'll tell you what, hearing what all went on, and he had foreknowledge of that in that sense, it's a good thing it wasn't me. I'm not worthy to be in that position, but I can guarantee you I'd be saying, no, thank you. I'll just let them go. Can't deal with that. It's too hard. It's too much to ask. And yet he bore our sorrows. He bore our grief so that we could be freed. And so as a generation and as a people today, what do we do? Why do we sometimes acquiesce to the world? Why do we look back to Sodom and Gomorrah? Why is it addressed in 2 Timothy 3 where it talks about these perilous times, these times that are so sinful and so full of that which God can't tolerate? Why? Why do we do those things? We do them. I do them. I will not talk about anyone else in that manner, but I suggest to you that Jesus Christ, while he died for me only, collectively we can accept that sacrifice too. I believe that truly. He goes on in chapter 15 where he talks about, if I turn your attention back to verse 22, he talks about this bitter water. And, of course, the Egyptians now are moaning. I can't even have water. And it's referred to as a place of marah, which just simply means bitterness. And yet, then suddenly we see the sweetened water. And, of course, he addresses that by telling us about the statutes. In chapter 16, he talks about we're hungry. What? We can't get anything. We're so hungry. And, again, Moses has to address the issues and say, stand back. Our Father's going to take care of it. And he does. He gave them manna. He gave them a way to live. Until they got to the point of Canaan, they had food. They had manna. They knew that they were going to have this. Now, some people abuse that. Remember how we know that they were told to take a double portion for the Sabbath. Sometimes they took more than they, on a daily basis, than they needed. They were greedy, and the manna just simply turned to full of worms. These things were going on. In other words, these were points of faith. This is a point of faith when we fight our battles and we're told to sit back or to understand. And sometimes we don't. And then it just becomes somewhat wormy. We don't understand that it isn't our will but His to be done. That's something that I have a difficult time with at times. I think men are worse about this. They like control. Don't necessarily have it. I'm married. But the thing of it is, I'll tell you a story about cookies later. But that's after church. But the thing is that we like control. We want to do things our way. And that's not what really our free moral agency should be about, but to serve our Father in heaven. We are His disciples. If you look into Matthew 28, what does it talk about there at the end? Doesn't it talk about making disciples of the world? And we're to be having that responsibility ourselves. And we do it in many ways. And it isn't just pray and pay. Okay? That's what I believe. There are things for us to be doing. I turn your attention quickly to Joshua. In Joshua, chapter 1. And I know we've read this before, where it talks about the commission of Joshua. But I want to read it again in that after the death of Moses, beginning in verse 1, it talks about there was a transition to Joshua. Just as there is a transition, in essence, to every one of us, as we stand here, I look out at my grandkids. I look out at my son, my daughter, my daughter-in-law. I look at a different generation. I look out at Adrian. All that ever. I mean, in other words, this is all happening. And this is, we have a responsibility to each other. And we know that this is coming. And we need to stand up. And we need to understand that the world is changing. And we need to educate ourselves. If we haven't, we need to be ready. I really think that we need to understand that. I have no time frame, but I do think time is of the essence. Okay, that's a way of me saying I think it's short. But that's just me. It's short for me anyways, I know. I'm getting older. And I'm feeling it, so I understand things are changing. But I would caution you to think that we have all the time in the world. I've always lived my life that way. I want to tell you about a situation real quickly that I went to dinner with a minister that was coming through town. And looking back, I don't really think, well, I know for a fact the man was incorrect about this. He was talking about the tribulation that started in the 90s and that we had no more than 6 years. And I'm going, and I remember, well, I won't tell you I went to the restroom, but yeah, that's I'm in there counting. Oh, let's see, what is that? And I was saying, well, 6 years. You know, this is when I was younger, too, because I was thinking, well, 6 years, that's a while. That's a ways. 6 years is a twinkling of the eye. Well, here I am now in 2009, and I am relieved to say that we're still here in that sense, I guess. However, I think that we do need to think about the return of Jesus Christ and its imminence, and that we are to pray for it, and that we are to wait with our staff in hand ready to go. You see, we need to be anxious about our circumstance. Not worried, but praying God's return, Jesus' return. So he goes on and he says in verse, let's do verse 4. From the wilderness and this Lebanon, as far as the river Euphrates, all the land of the Hittites, this is what you're going to receive as your territory. And he says in verse 5, no man shall be able to stand before you all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will not leave you nor forsake you. I will not leave you nor forsake you. You see, that tradition carries on today. I'm really big on tradition, as I told you. I believe that with all my heart. It wasn't just Moses. It's every one of you here today. Proverbs 2, verses 7 and 8 says, he stores up a sound wisdom for the upright. He is a shield to those who walk uprightly. He guards the path of justice, and he preserves the way of his saints. You talk about a sidewalk. He guards the path of justice and preserves the way of his saints. Let's turn quickly to Psalms 1. Psalms here? Oh, yeah, it's here. Okay. Blessed is the man, in verse 1, who walks not in the counsel of the ungodly. This requires education. Nor stands in the paths of sinners. Have we not heard a hymn such as this? All he does prospers. I guess something like that. No, I'm wrong on that, right? Karen will tell me later. Blessed the man who walks not in the counsel of the ungodly, or stands in the path of sinners, nor sits in the seat of the scornful, but his delight is the law of the Lord. Not what's out here, not Sodom and Gomorrah, not all those things that are going on out in this world, but he delights in the law of God, nor sits in the seat of the scornful. But his delight is in the law of the Lord, excuse me, in verse 2b is, and in his law he meditates day and night. In other words, he keeps that in the front. Have you ever seen those frontlets that some of the Israelites wear? They have that little thing in the front that's attached, and they have scriptures and words of encouragement, I guess, inside, called the frontlets. That's what I sort of view this. In other words, you're keeping this in front of you. It's neither to the right or the left. It's right here. It's what should be not only in your mind, but in your heart as well. It should be in the very bowels of your existence, particularly spiritually. He shall be like a tree planted by the rivers of water that brings forth its fruit in its season, whose leaf also shall not wither, and whatever he does shall prosper. The godly are not so. There's a reminder. The godly are not so, but are like the chaff with the wind that's driven. And I believe, as the words of the hymn go, driven to and fro. Therefore the ungodly shall not stand in the judgment, nor sinners in the congregation of the righteousness. As we congregants of the great God eternal, I pray we be of the righteousness of God. Would you turn with me to Deuteronomy 26, please? Deuteronomy 26. Yes, we fight the battle. Yes, we are his people. Yes, we are required to know his law. Yes, we are required to understand his commandments, his statutes. What is intended for us? Yes, we have this time, this moment. Will we always have it? Doubtful. Will we always have this peace? More than likely not. Let me share with you real quickly something when I was sitting in the waiting room with my brother-in-law at the hospital the other day, because my father-in-law had surgery. He works for Sandia, and he was telling me that he was in a meeting or some type of group situation where they were talking with a weapons expert who was an expert during the Bush administration. I don't know exactly what his responsibilities were, but he had some exposure. Now, I'm going to put this out to you. And I will only tell you it's secondhand, it's hearsay, okay? But I can see where this is going. I can see it happening. He suggests that within the next 4 years, America will see a nuclear weapon explosion. We will see some type of nuclear attack upon our soil. Can you imagine what that will be like? How affected we were by the Twin Towers, But think about wiping out a portion of a city or a whole city or a whole some community, and you can't even go back there for 1,000 years because of the fallout or whatever. What's that going to do to our psyche? That's what terrorism is all about, isn't it? It's not necessarily to eliminate all the world. They know they can't do all the people that they're trying to fight, but they know they can put the fear that we need to be aware of, they are their existence. And this is what's going on in the world that we live in, I believe. Should we know what God intends for us? Absolutely. Should we know what his plan is? Absolutely. Should we know where we're going? Absolutely. We have time. Let us see who we are in the metal that we have. Through his strength, not our own, we can never get that done. In Deuteronomy 26, I leave you with this in verse 16. This day the Lord your God commands you to observe these statutes and judgments. Did I tell you it was chapter 26? Okay, good. Let me start again. This day the Lord your God commands you to observe these statutes and judgments. Therefore you shall be careful to observe them with all your heart and all your soul. Today you have proclaimed the Lord to be your God, and that you will walk in his ways and keep his statutes, his commandments and his judgments, and that you will always obey his voice. Also today the Lord has proclaimed you to be his special people. Just as he has promised you that you should keep all of his commandments, and this that he would set you high above all nations which he has made, in praise, in name, and in honor, and that you may be a holy people to the Lord God, just as he has spoken it. I give you those words, praying that we all take to heart what he has set in motion for you and me.